Chapter 6. The Battle of the Crucible.
You seem nervous, sorcerer.
Efrix looked up from his scrying ball. King Vexos Thrond had come into his chamber unannounced again. The man was insufferable.
You are king of all you survey in the Great Crucible, said Efrix, but you are not lord of this fortress. Send word you are coming next time. I am engaged in delicate magics that your arrogant interruptions risk.
Efrix turned his back on the giant warrior king, a pointed signal that he should depart. Thrond did not. Efrix frowned.
Do you treat all your hosts with such ill manners? Asked Thrond.
And you treat all your guests so poorly? Asked Efrix.
The beasts of my menagerie are always hungry, Efrix. Do not insult me.
Efrix flapped a dismissive hand.
Your coterie of monsters from the Rim might be enough to ensure your rule of the Crucible, your majesty. But I have the support of Tzeentch himself. Be wary that I do not turn your creatures into statues of tin.
Thrond snorted and came to Efrix's side. Thrond was enormous, for he too was favoured by Tzeentch. The sale of his soul had ensured Thrond would rule forever, and the king had become more and more swollen with the energies of chaos as the years had passed. He had been the lord of the Crucible almost as long as Efrix had ruled Anvrok. The two were long-standing, if wary, allies. The Crucible king bent his horned helm to Efrix's golden scrying bowl. Efrix had never seen him without it. Deep in the vision slits, tawny eyes reflected the bowl's picture in miniature. Stormcasts ascending upon a ladder of swords, or following the Drakoths, who clawed handholds into the metal as they went.
They're still climbing.
As they have been for the last 4 days,
said Efrix. In the bowl, the stormcast toiled upwards without pause.
See how they struggle. It is hard work for them. They are created for war.
He laughed.
Each must weigh as much as 3 mortal men. They will be weakened when they attain the Crucible Lip.
Yet they near the top. Do they lose many of their number?
Thrond had a reputation for sudden fury. He was frustrated by the demands Tzeentch forced on him, and horrified at the boredom his eternal life brought. A fine jest on Tzeentch's part, but his temper put Efrix in danger.
Sky rays dog them, but take only a few. They are guarded by many winged warriors. I have seen others grip the swords too tightly and shear off their own fingers. And those who fall will fall forever through the void. Solemnis is a dubious friend,
Efrix smiled unpleasantly. The thought amused him.
Their force is reduced further by dissension. There was some kind of disagreement before they began.
Efrix's smile grew wider still.
Many remained below in my land and go about other business,
he scowled. The trespassers irritated him, but there was nothing he could do about it from up here.
How many come?
1,000, I would say,
said Efrix distractedly. He dearly hoped Thrond would get the point and depart.
The dragons battle still. Now that is a sight I have never seen.
Thrond grunted.
Argentine's distraction at least provides my men with a chance for extra sport. They welcome this unlooked-for solidification of the silver. Ordinarily, we must wait for the moon's full waxing before we hunt upon the sea.
Do not let them roam far. There will be plenty more sport soon enough when the enemy reach the brink. They must be delayed long enough for me to effect another translocation. I'll have them chasing this fortress all over the realm.
Naturally, this was only one option Efrix had, and the least favoured, but he wasn't about to tell Thrond that.
Do you tell a king his business in his own kingdom?
Efrix curled his lip.
No,
he said.
As it should be, said Thrond. I will gather my army. Life has been somewhat tedious of late. I look forward to this battle. I will buy you your time, sorcerer, so you may build your power to remove your fortress from my kingdom. But remove it you will.
Thrond swaggered out. Another muscle-bound idiot. Efrix was doubtful Thrond could be killed easily, and he was far more dangerous than Myrek.
Still, he mused, we shall see how well his strength serves him when he is trapped forever in the crystal labyrinth.
Efrix pursed his lips in thought. He supposed he ought to thank the storm hosts for dealing with Myrek. He watched the dragons fighting, immense god-beasts tearing wounds the length of canyons in each other. The celestial dragon was coming off worse. Argentine was youthful as star dragons measure things, and invigorated by the power of chaos. That battle would not last much longer. With luck, Argentine would drive off Dracothian and melt the silver before the stormcast could reach the lip. Now wouldn't that be a fine sight, and most fortuitous? He left the bowl troubled. Somehow, fortune did not seem to be on his side. From the great window of his tower, he looked out across Thrond's lands. The Crucible Kingdom was a series of islands in the Silver Sea, each capped by an ornate castle and linked by a complex set of raised causeways and bridges. Efrix had brought the Eldritch Fortress to rest upon the biggest island. Thrond's own citadel occupied this island also, but jutted out from the side. He had not built it at the summit, for that lay directly beneath the Shard Gate, and that suited the sorcerer perfectly. As Efrix thought of the gate, the window showed him a jagged gash in the world surrounded by a gemstone-studded archway that glowed with a hard diamond light, for the Shard Gate opened directly into the crystal labyrinth of Tzeentch, and was the chief entrance to this realm for the god's servants. Efrix could feel the regard of the great changer coming from the gate, fixed upon him with a mixture of amusement, pride, and malice. The giant crystals around the opening glinted threateningly. Efrix shuddered and bade the window show him the work of his slaves as they patched and mended his ruptured castle walls. He had brought his fortress beneath the Shardgate not only to deny the hammer to the Sigmarites, but to speed the delivery of all of Chamon to Tzeentch. For that to happen, he needed the Stormcast Eternals to attack one more time, to die and fill his copper skulls with their magic. Kairos was as likely to stop him as to aid him now, wishing to bring the prize to Tzeentch himself. They were coming to the end of their relationship. Efrix crossed his arms. Only a week ago, everything had seemed so simple. Now he had Thrond threatening him, Kairos moving against him, and Sigmar himself banging on the gate. He had to either fulfill his ultimate ambition or move the fortress by the time the Stormcast Eternals got there, and all before Kairos did whatever it was Kairos wanted to do. As he thought over his predicament, his frustration gave birth to a fresh smile. Why pledge oneself body and soul to the master of the great game if one did not enjoy playing? The board, as presented, offered a fine challenge. A great bellow shattered his train of thought. His window swerved and looked for him, finding the source. Dracothian was departing, his mighty head rising over the low hills of the Crucible's rim. Swimming through the ether, he fled ponderously upward, bleeding starlight from a thousand wounds. Efrix's window followed the Father of Dragons as he ascended high into the sky. There he vanished with a nova flash and returned to the heavens of Azir. Moments later, Argentine's flames roared anew.
"Form up!"
bellowed Vandas. A thin line of stormcast bowed outward around the lip of the falls. A horde of chaos warriors came at them.
"Protect those still climbing!"
Thostos shouted. Kallanax roared. Others of his kind answered. Prosecutors alighted on the slippery metal to drag their comrades up from the ladder of swords. Others worked in pairs, wings beating hard as they flew judicators and liberators up. A mist had met the stormcasts as the first gained the lip of the falls, but this was clearing, and Vandas had a good view of exactly what they were up against. The oncoming horde was emerging from a confusion of high towers, walkways and bridges that stretched across the set sea, linking island to island. In the far distance, a plug of rock jutted out of the metal, the plateau atop it veiled by multicoloured clouds. The Eldritch Fortress was there. Even as Vandus looked upon it, he was sure the great eye atop the central tower was looking at him in turn, as well as something on the far side of the gate that glimmered above. Master and servant regarded Vandus with uncloaked hatred. Night had come. The scarred face of the alchemist's moon was crawling along the horizon, its light glinting from plates of chaos armor as the horde raced down steps and from wharfs onto the solid silver.
Ionis! Vandus called. The sea warms already!
We do not have much time, said the Lord Relictor.
We must take the fight to them,
said Thostos, and strode forward.
He waits for no counsel, complained Vandus.
Do not blame him. His wrath fills the hollows left by his death, said Ionis.
Come, let us be at them.
The Lords of Azir led the charge. A wedge formation of stormcast eternals from half a dozen different storm hosts ploughed into the foe. The climb had tired them all, but they fought hard, the knowledge that their brothers' lives depended on their valour giving them desperate strength. Ionis and Vandus fought close by, the magic of the Lord Relictor and the hammer of the Lord Celestant reaping dozens of lives. Many of the enemy bore terrible disfigurements and mutations. The army of Sigmar was nearing the heart of chaos in this land, and its influence was becoming pronounced. More stormcasts were coming over the brink, running to reinforce the line of their fellows. A multi-hued phalanx pressed forward, weapons swinging as one engine of destruction. Never mind that they were of different hosts and tempers. All were stormcast eternals, and centuries of training had made them brothers. They fought with a single mind. With the first formation reinforced, a second and a third were brought into being by Vandus's peers and pushed out from the falls. Thostos forged on ahead. Vandus saw him and his dwindling warrior chamber engaged by a crowd of giant mutants, more demon than man. These beasts bore blades that shone with dark power, and they cut through Sigmarite like paper. Celestial vindicators fell around them, but Thostos's skin was again somehow proof against their weapons, and he killed them with impunity. The changes in his friend were strange indeed, thought Vandus. Vandus went about the slaughter grimly. For all their misbegotten nature, there was discipline to the Chaos Army. Those sections of the Chaos Line that fell back did so in good order, towards the stairs where they formed deep ranks, keeping the stormcasts upon the rapidly warming silver, while other Chaos Warriors came around their flanks, seeking to cut off the route from the Crucible Lip. Slowly but surely, the stormcast Eternals were being surrounded. The silver underfoot became sticky and yielding, the armoured corpses upon it cooking as they sank into the sludge. The nearest stair was agonisingly close, but blocked by black-armoured warriors.
To the stairs! Decimators, gather together! Forge a path! Prosecutors, clear the way!
Ordered Vandus. By now, the Stormcast Eternals had become more organised, falling into their allotted units as they fought their way forward. 20 decimators advanced, heavy feet snagging into the softening silver. With a cry to Sigmar, they charged. The warriors in the front rank struck down the enemy before them, then peeled away to the back of their retinue, allowing the axe of the next warrior to hit, so that they kept up a flowing charge that penetrated deep into the chaos warriors mobbing the stairs. Prosecutors blasted those enemies trying to reinforce the weakening regiment, and suddenly the decimators were through. They battled up the stairway, their fellows coming after them. Nearby, Thostos roared out a command and led his own decimators in a similar endeavour up another stair. Other Lord Celestants followed suit. Once upon the road, they joined forces and pushed on towards the first tower on the network of causeways. Kallanax bounded up the stairs, and Vandus urged him to the edge of the road so that he might see how the battle went. He cursed loudly, for the majority of the storm hosts were still embattled on the Silver Sea. Streams of molten silver were opening up between the fragmenting surface. Large chunks of the surface sank abruptly as the silver underneath turned liquid, dragging down Stormcast and Chaos Warrior alike. The air whooshed and banged to the departing energies of men he could ill afford to lose. A pair of diabolical voices rolled out over the conflict, delivering orders and rebukes in a dark tongue.
Ionis!
Shouted Vandus down to the Lord Relictor.
Make haste!
Though scores of warriors had fought to the stairways and beyond, the rest were still intermingled with the Chaos Horde. Perhaps a tenth of their number would make it through before the sea baked the rest in their armour.
There are too many!
Shouted Ionis Cryptborn, raising his reliquary.
I shall forge a path if I can, for Sigmar and Azir!
There was a crash of thunder, and a colossal bolt of lightning shot from the skies to slam into the Lord Relictor. It coursed through him, shooting through the molten silver to turn every Chaos Warrior within 100 paces to scorched meat. The Stormcast Eternals were invigorated by the divine bolt. Finding their passage suddenly unbarred, they surged for the walkways by the 100. Cryptborn came last, sinking further as he struggled onwards. A giant Chaos Warrior, clad in golden armour and carrying a huge axe, waded after him. Ionis reached the bottommost step of the stair before the surface collapsed and slid under a roiling swirl of molten silver. The Chaos Warriors howled in agony as the sea took them.
Ionis!
Vandus called.
To me!
Ionis never made it to the top of the stairs. The giant in gold hauled himself from the silver, steaming with the heat. He swayed upon the bottom step.
Ionis, beware!
Roared Vandus. But it was too late. The giant leapt, his axe swinging into the Lord Relictor's head and splitting it neatly in two.
Ionis!
Vandus cried out. He slipped off Kallanax and ran to the stairs. A trio of prosecutors stepped before him, their sword staffs blocking his way. He made to shove past them, but they pushed him back. Below, Stormcasts pressed forwards, and the golden warrior was cut down, landing on Ionis's corpse. The prosecutors placed their hands upon Vandus's shoulders, gently restraining him.
No, my lord, you must not go to him.
A crack of thunder, mightier than all the rest, split the sky. Ionis's mortal form transmuted into a blazing spear of lightning that rushed upwards. Where it pierced the sky, black clouds wheeled and flickered with power. Ionis Cryptborn departed the realm of Chamon. Vandus watched helplessly as his friend was taken home to Azir. Then Kallanax was there, growling at Vandus in rebuke. Vandus placed his palm flat on the beast's hide in wordless apology for leaving him, and climbed onto his back. Horns rang. There were two towers close by, one standing athwart the raised road Vandus was upon, and another situated further into the sea on the roadway parallel to him. Upon the second road, Thostos and his warrior chamber had a group of Chaos Warriors trapped. These were being pushed back, screaming as they fell from the edge. Vandus's roadway was almost clear of the enemy, and the army was retreating towards its towers. Another horn blared, and the retreat abandoned all semblance of order as the Chaos Warriors broke into headlong flight.
Hold!
Shouted Vandus. To his relief, the Stormcasts checked their pursuit and began ordering themselves. Another horn sounded, shrill and demoniacal. The gates to the keeps clanked open, and out thundered tall knights of chaos upon heavy horses. They rode forward without care for their fellows, and more than one fleeing infantryman was buffeted off the edge of the road. Their lances dropped, and they smashed into the lead elements of Vandus's army. So many died that the Lord Celestant lost sight of the Chaos Knights as a wall of storm magic leapt upward. Vandus and Kallanax hastened forward, the Drakoth leaping between lesser walkways, support spars, and the vile decorations that clung to them. A clattering of metal wheels upon the road preceded the arrival of heavy chariots, fashioned from steel, each dragged by a grunting ape-like creature. Their charge spent, the knights wheeled and fell back with admirable grace, leaving lanes free for the chariots to crash into the ranks of Stormcasts. Unable to move aside, Sigmar's warriors instead leapt to the attack and were cut down for their bravery. Dozens of Stormcasts were tossed high into the air by the impact and the flailing fists of the warbeasts. Scythes on wheels lopped limbs from bodies, while those Stormcasts wounded but not slain were finished by the halberds of the charioteers.
Is there no end to them?
Asked Vandus. He looked for opportunity. There, on the other causeway, a chariot went hurtling at the rear of a group of celestial vindicators.
Can you make the leap, my friend?
Kallanax grumbled deep in his chest by way of reply. He crouched down, muscles bunching in his huge haunches. With a tremendous push, he jumped into the air. A blur of bubbling silver passed beneath his belly, and he and Vandas were over, slamming straight into the side of the chariot and tipping it over with an almighty bang. It skidded across the road and plummeted into the silver sea, its dray ape hooting in surprise and fury as it was dragged to its death. Another chariot came at them, and Kallanax lowered his head like a bull, bashing aside the ape and knocking the chariot onto its side. The charioteers were thrown free, one sliding straight off the edge, the other arresting his fall and scrabbling for an axe. Kallanax crept up over the upended chariot, and Vandas swept off the man's head with a blow from Heldensen. The ape thing ripped at its traces, dragging itself free enough to aim a brutal fist at the Drakoth's face. Kallanax caught the hand in his jaws and wrenched it free in a spray of blood. The ape howled and staggered before Kallanax disemboweled it with a swipe of his claws. Kallanax climbed atop the wreck, raised his head, and roared. Behind them, Thostos and his men were dispatching the remainder of the infantry. On the other road, the stormcasts finally halted the chariot's progress and slew riders and beasts. Lesser walkways swayed as warriors duelled upon them. No quarter was asked and none given. At great cost, the day belonged to the Stormcast Eternals. Vandas stood atop a captured tower and watched his men as they went about the unpleasant business that follows any battle. They walked causeways choked with corpses, tipping the bodies of Chaos warriors into the Silver Sea. The air was thick with heat, and the sea glowed ruddily in the dark. The Stormcasts went slowly, for all were by now mightily weary.
8 days march, 4 days climb, and a battle, said Vandas to Kallanax. And still Lord Thostos paces like a caged lion, eager for the hunt.
Vandas watched his restless friend. The foxfire of his eyes glowed balefully. Vandas suppressed a shudder, thinking on the fates of Andricus and Ionis. Would they too be changed when next they met? He had assumed that his friendships in this new life would never be sundered by death. How quickly he had been proven wrong.
As for the rest, they're tired.
Kallanax rumbled beside him.
Men's strength lies in another place to yours, my friend, said Vandas. And these are not men, but more than men. Even they have their limits, and they must rest.
He himself was exhausted. His muscles ached. Sorrowful and uncertain, he looked out down the network of pathways and roads. The day had been carried, but the price was almost too high, and Vandas had sincere doubts that he would be successful. First, Andricus had fallen, and now Ionis. Only 1,000 Stormcasts had followed him up the falls, the rest taken elsewhere by their lords, and of that number, a full half had been slain gaining the Crucible Lip and the First Tower. There were dozens of fortifications between them and the island where the Eldritch Fortress sat, gloatingly beneath the Chaos Gate. Fires burned from the tops of towers, and harsh music and uncouth shouts came from the nearest.
How do we reach it? He murmured.
We have but 500 Stormcast Eternals remaining. So many are gone back to the Chambers of Reforging. I will sorely miss Andricus's guidance in the matters of siege. We are lost and alone in a nation of maniacs. He looked upward. The night was at its darkest, and the skies were rich with stars. He looked to them a while, and when he spoke again, he was less bitter. During the long calm, I would go to the top of the towers in Sigmaron, he said. Kallanax huffed out a steaming breath. I would seek enlightenment there, try to remember who I was, and to find my place in the new world I found myself in. He looked to his mount. I hear the dragonkin ask the stars for sooth often, and that they sometimes reply. Will they answer me now?
Vandas looked upwards and slowly shook his head.
No, I see nothing.
The constellations are all different, and they do not know me. What should I do, noble Kallinax? I wish you could speak the tongues of men and share your wisdom. Vandas returned his gaze to the stars. The venture hung by a thread. What could he do? Perhaps the answer lay within himself. He recalled Ionis's words to him about his visions, that they might prove either useful or treacherous. Could he seek to trigger them consciously? Vandas was profoundly uncomfortable with the idea, but he closed his eyes. He had no clue what he should do. In his old life, he had no gift of magecraft, but was his stormcast body not suffused with magic? Perhaps all he must do was... He fell deep within himself. His knees buckled. He felt it as if it had happened to someone else, but enough awareness remained that he fell away from the edge of the tower, and then he knew no more of his earthly body. A flicker of images came. He saw the alchemist's moon rising up over the edge of the crucible and climbing towards its apogee. As its light intensified, the great worm Argentine twisted and hid its face from the brightness. Silver stiffened and solidified. Baying parties of chaos warriors poured from the keeps and islands of the land and hunted across the solid surface. The silver was still hot and steamed in the reflected moonlight, but was made hard. Vandas's perspective shifted. He saw before him a citadel, bigger than any other, and he knew with iron certainty that this was the castle of King Thrond, the lord of this land. It jutted out over the silver sea on a natural promontory of stone and metal. As he saw this, what he must do came to him with utter clarity. He gasped, and his eyes flew open. His skin ran with sweat under his armor. Despite the heat of the crucible, he shivered. Kallinax nosed his master. The Lord Celestine slowly sat up, then stood. Again the weakness he had felt before afflicted him. He walked to the parapet of the tower to look upon his warriors. He knew what he must do. He shouted for attention and began to address his men.